Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 305 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her every breath. Huh? Yeah, her lungs. What? All right, this is going to be really interesting, so strap in and just listen up. Before we begin, just know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okay, now here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because we love your feedback. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Now, how would you like to buy a book, the title of which is Breathtaking? Breathtaking, I love it. Breathtaking, what is that? Well, the subtitle says it all. The power, fragility, and future of our extraordinary lungs. Boy, I'll tell you, this couldn't be more timely in the era of the COVID virus, where it's all things lungs. Let me read you just the very beginning in the prologue. Okay, lungs equals life. The lungs are a mysterious and even mystical organ. They are our connection to the atmosphere, the organ that extracts the life force we need to exist. Oh, I just love that. So what is this about? Well, our expert is the author, Dr. Michael Stephen. Now, Dr. Stephen is an associate professor at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia and director of the Adult Cystic Fibrosis Center. And he's a leader of numerous clinical trials in the front line caring for COVID patients and also recovered from the virus himself. All right, here we go. Michael, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Peek, and that was a great introduction. I really appreciate all those kind words.
Oh, well, listen, they weren't just kind, they're true, because, you know, trust me, I want to make sure to put out authenticity, and I'm telling you, wow, why did you write this book?
You know, Dr. Peek, I got involved in the lungs about 15 years ago during my residency, and the moment I stepped into the intensive care unit, saw the ventilators, saw that there was this huge burden of illness there. But if you worked with people's lungs and you worked with their bodies, you could pull them back off the precipice they were falling off of. And I just fell in love with the ICU. And the ICU is a ton of lung medicine, ventilators. You know, everybody knows what a ventilator is now because of COVID. But working with the ventilator, working with pneumonias, working with infections in the ICU at this extremely high level of illness was what got me started in the field. And it's carried me through ever since. And unfortunately, I'm sort of having the same experience now, 15 years later, because I'm back in the ICU a lot. And again, you know, trying to pull these people back from the cliff that they fell off of, this time with the virus we know very little about. So.
Yeah, I know. Tell us about your COVID experience.
So my COVID experience, you know, we started off and, you know, it was April, May. I'm in Philadelphia. So we were hearing a lot of what was going on in New York, and things were getting very out of control up there. And things got very, very busy here. And it was very difficult in the beginning. There's a principle of medicine called do no harm, right? And that's the first thing that you're if you don't know what to do, you shouldn't do anything. And I think we abandoned that in this country. You know, we rush to treat with medicines now that were proven not to be effective, but we wanted to do something. You know, our intentions were in the right place. And so there weren't a lot of good medicines in the hospital. We didn't know what we were doing. There was tremendous fear in the hospital that I've never, ever felt before, that for the first time in our lives, we are at great personal risk here. And I felt like I was watching the modern soldiers of D-Day here, you know, holding civilization together as things fell apart. So I did 2 months in the ICU, and we did the best we could. There was a lot of suffering. There were people who recovered, and you know, people just really kept it together and persevered through, you know, not great personal protective equipment. Then, unfortunately, you know, towards the end of May, I got hit very hard with COVID. I was very sick at home for a few weeks, and then ended up in the hospital with pneumonia and blood clots. I had a lot of guilt, you know, about it. You know, where did I slip up? Where did I take my mask off at the wrong moment? I passed it to my two young children and wife. We can fortunately talk about a happy ending now, but it was certainly touch and go in there with myself and with my family for a little bit. But society, you know, they banded together and they kept us up in the community. The hospital built me back up. So I have nothing to complain about, and I consider myself blessed.
Wow. And you know, something from all of us on our team to you, we're so happy that you and your family recovered as you did, because what a horrific experience, especially for you. You know, if I can conjecture a little bit, you know, once you're in the hospital and you're dealing with all of that with such a huge viral load floating around, you know, I think that frontliners like yourself really were at just ridiculous risk no matter what. So again, we're so happy that you made it through.
I appreciate that. And I think that's true. And I think, you know, in the beginning, the ability of this virus to get in the air a little bit was downplayed. And we really talked all this about droplet and 6 feet. And, you know, and if you're not 6 feet and you're not a droplet, then you're totally safe. And I don't think that's totally true. And we're becoming to appreciate that. And it is a very tricky virus. There was tremendous guilt with me and bringing it home with my family. But certainly the support of the community and words like that from you, you know, mean so much to me, just because of what we went through.
Oh, to say the least. You know, do you think that the lungs are kind of underappreciated in terms of their extreme importance for our life? I mean, we hear about heart disease, and then there's cancer of this and that and whatever, prostate and breast. But what about those lungs? You know, what I'm seeing now, and all you have to do out there in the Herb podcast land is just hit Dr. Google and just put in breathing and all the rest of it. And what you're going to see now are just countless websites and blogs and God knows what about how to take deep breaths now and to do breathing exercises to be able to optimize our respiratory muscles so that should we get something like this virus, we're more likely to survive than not. What do you think about all that? You're the expert.
I think that's an excellent idea. And I think people need to get back in tune to the breath. You know, looking back thousands of years, I think we were more in tune to the breath then than now. And chest medicine has been ignored. And we've seen this huge upshot in lung diseases the last 50 years, whereas, you know, cardiovascular disease and strokes and cancer have all declined in health. You know, our atmosphere and the toxicities in it have increased. And so, you know, taking care of your breath, exactly like you say, I think is very important. Getting in tune with your breath, learning how to breathe with that diaphragm, keeping strong muscles of the chest are very, very important. And we know women are at more risk for a lot of these lung diseases because their lungs are smaller. So for the same toxin loads, it's going to a smaller space. So COPD is much easier to get for a woman. You know, traditionally, smoking rates have been lower in women, and certainly they not caught up completely, but the declines have been slower than we'd like in women as well. So, you know, men and women, you know, elderly or the younger, you know, we're all at risk. We have to take care of our breath, like you're saying, through breathing exercises to ensuring that we have, you know, a healthy breath. We have to think of it as a universal right to breathe clean air. You know we want to all breathe clean water. When we're not drinking clean water, it goes all over the country. It's a national scandal. Well, you know, 45% of Americans are, according to the American Lung Association, are exposed to toxic levels of air each year. It's just not something we're talking about. And that's increased in numbers every year since 2017. So we need to take care of the breath, absolutely. We need to take care of our atmosphere. And we have to make it a universal right that breathing clean air is a right.
You know, I'm just applaud you for that, because now that we're much more in tune with climate, with environment, there's another thing that this whole COVID issue has really helped support, and that is the issue of the rooms and the homes and the buildings and their health, environmental health per se. So I'll bet a lot of people didn't even know what a HEPA filter was before. I bet you do now. You know, when you're looking at ventilation, one of my colleagues and his wife just picked up COVID when they were in a poorly ventilated environment that was out of their control, and they both picked it up. So now we're really paying more attention to environment. So do you, when people say, well, is my house safe? How do people begin to address that issue?
Right. And it should be addressed. I agree completely. There's a couple different things that you should look at. So people should be monitoring humidity in their household, you know, and you want to keep the humidity about between 30% and 50%. You know, people without asthma or trouble with cold air or trouble with dry air can maybe get a little loose with those restrictions. But certainly people with asthmatics, people sensitive to dry air will want to moisten it during the winter. And then in the summer, you know, you may want to dry it out a little bit. So you want to keep a little bit of a track of the humidity in your household, 30 to 50%. You want to keep track of the allergens. You know, what pets do I have in my house? Am I allergic to those pets? Things like that. Radon is a cause of lung cancer. It's a very well-established cause of lung cancer. So everybody should have, you know, their house tested for radon at least once, usually when they move in. And if it's safe then, you know, unless there's major construction going on, it's probably not going to change. So you have to be careful.
What about the filters? What about filters? You know, people are now saying, you know, I got to, you know, clean out the air for my lungs so that I'm not, you know, potentially inhaling COVID, but also just all the other dreck in the air. So what about filters?
Yeah, filters can be very helpful. Absolutely. They can be helpful for people with sort of asthma and allergies to help filter out, you know, any allergic pollen that comes in there. If you live near a highway, you know, they've shown that, you know, COPD and mortality can be closer if you live near a highway, and that's basically you're going to be getting toxic fumes into your house then. And in that case, you know, you should probably keep your window shut most of the time and absolutely have a HEPA filter in your house will hold to help clean the air. So the HEPA filters can absolutely help clean out toxins. They can help clean out allergens. And you have to sort of decide, you know, am I at such a high risk here where I'm living with either of those things to justify, you know, putting one of these into my house? You know, if you live in a high allergen zone, maybe you just need to keep your window shut, you know, during the spring and then in the fall when the ragweed comes out. So it has to be individualized, I think. I don't think everybody needs to rush out and buy a HEPA filter. If you think, you know, if you generally have clean air and you generally have good lung health, you don't live near somewhere obviously toxic, you know, I think you're probably okay. But if there are concerns with allergies or living near somewhere toxic or you want to clean out the toxins in your house, then a HEPA filter, you know, one upstairs, one downstairs can absolutely help filter the air. There's no question about it.
All right. Since we're graced by you, the pulmonary expert, tell us what happens in the lungs with COVID. So many people are just sitting around saying, oh my God, I'm just cough and then pneumonia. And then of course you had the clots. What occurs in so many people's lungs with COVID?
That's a great question. And we don't have a lot of the answers, but we know a lot more now than we did 7 or 8 months ago. So certainly COVID, you know, it's a virus. It has this DNA that infects your cells, and the infection starts in the nose. And then in most people, in the majority of people, it goes to the throat. And in the majority of people, actually, it actually gets into the lungs, you know, to a lesser or more extent. They, you know, they look at CAT scans in China very early on, of about 100 patients, and 95 of them who were totally asymptomatic had evidence mostly of mild pneumonias on their CAT scan, which is extraordinary to me. So these patients were walking around asymptomatic COVID, and they have a little bit of evidence of pneumonia. And pneumonia means that virus has made its way from, you know, your nose or your throat where it started, and it's crawled down and gone into your lungs and caused inflammation, caused white cells to react to try and contain it in there. And that's what a pneumonia is. A pneumonia is an infectious particle plus your body's white cells, which inflame to attack that. And what happens in the lungs when there's too much virus and there's too much white cells, then that clogs up your alveoli, and that's where your gas exchange takes place, your oxygen coming in and your carbon dioxide coming out. So pneumonia impairs our ability to do that gas exchange just because of so much fluid, so much debris, so much virus, so many white cells there. And the very strange thing about COVID is, you know what happens when you get the flu, right? Most people get the cough and the runny nose and sore throat, and there's a little bit of a variability, but not as much with COVID. Some people can be completely asymptomatic, nothing. And then this vicious minority get this vicious death. So it's a very strange virus. Our immune system reacts to it wildly differently. Kids' immune system seems to pretty much just ignore it. So what happens, you know, to answer your question, the virus gets into the lungs, causes inflammation. That inflammation blocks up your ability to gas exchange, and that's the problem there.
Wow. And it happens quickly. It's powerful. It's also sneaky. And this is why you have people walking around with very low oxygen saturation, and they're just smiling at you. And they're saying, well, because it goes so slowly and it sneaks up. And that's why people have literally bought out every pulse oximeter out there. Tell people what the pulse oximeter is.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. There's this term in medicine called happy hypoxia that we're seeing. So people have hypoxia, they have low oxygen, but they appear happy. It makes no sense to us. We've never seen this ever before, Dr. Peak, with any other disease. It's so bizarre. When you have hypoxia, usually the body feels it. It senses it. You get short of breath. You look like you're sweating and you're short of breath. And then these people just come in and their oxygen is very low, and they're smiling at you. They have this happy hypoxia, and it's very scary. And it's something I'd never seen as a lung doctor before. And, you know, I've been in this business 20 years. And so it was a big shock to me. So people can absolutely do what you say. You know, if they want to monitor their oxygen levels at home, a pulse oximeter is basically a laser that monitors how much oxygen is in the very small capillaries of a finger. And it's very, very accurate. We use it in the hospital on almost every single patient. And it allows us not to take invasive blood tests to check the oxygen level. You can just put this little plastic laser contraption on a finger. It's totally non-invasive, totally painless, and it gives you a very accurate reading of what your saturation is. Normal saturation, is 95 to 100%. If you're over 90%, you're generally in a safe zone. But when you go below 90%, that's when things can get very difficult for your body. Your body is not getting in enough oxygen. It's a very cheap, inexpensive way to measure the amount of oxygen in your blood. It should read 100% saturation. Usually down to 95 is usually okay. You know, 90 to 95 is getting into a little bit of a danger zone. And then certainly anything less than 90, it's time to go to the emergency room and get yourself on some supplemental oxygen.
Excellent. That's fantastic. And, and this is a very simple thing that people can just do at home when they have this kind of thing going on. Because, you know, really, quite frankly, it's best, assuming you don't have a severe disease, that you try to manage this well at home. I'm working with, some colleagues who picked up COVID, and I'm monitoring them very closely, and they're doing great. And they're watching their pulse ox, and they're doing extremely well. But, you know, you have to be careful because, as you know more than anyone, the interesting thing about COVID is it comes, it goes, and then it comes back. And so what happens is it likes this, it's sort of act one and then act two. People get a little, you know, like, hey, I'm okay. I feel so much better. It's been 7 days. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're trying to push themselves, get out there and, you know, begin to, you know, stress themselves more. And then it comes back with a vengeance, which is why, you know, it's so terribly important to realize this is a really a tough virus. And it's a hardy one that will not leave, you know, for quite some time. And you said you were out for 3 to 4 weeks, something like that?
Yep, it was 4 weeks. And then it was another 3 months of intensive exercising at a slow, steady pace. As you mentioned, this is not a virus you want to sweat out. If you fool around with severe exercise in the first month of this virus, exactly what you said, you could enrage this virus and it will come back with a vengeance. So it is very much unlike the flu. You know, you're told, you know, go sweat out the last few days of this cold. You can just, you know, get rid of it, hydrate, and you'll, you know, get a good sleep and you'll be fine. You can't fool around with this virus like this. It will become enraged if you try vigorous exercise as a final healing measure. So yes, I was out a good month, and then it was a good 3 months of walking and swimming and getting back on my feet before any vigorous exercise. And it attacks the heart too. So they looked at patients who had recovered from COVID. Some were mild, some were moderate disease, and they got MRIs on them, completely asymptomatic, 3 months after their initial diagnosis. And something like 70% of them had evidence of moderate inflammation on their MRI, of the cardiac MRI. Really scary stuff. And the blood markers, the troponin, which is a marker of heart injury, was elevated in 60% of these people, 3 months, totally asymptomatic. That study out of Germany, published in JAMA, I believe, just totally blew my mind away. So you have to be very careful with this virus. There's no question.
A lot of people have asked whether or not there are specific, you know, as it were, respiratory supplements that you could take. I know that lots have been written about vitamin D, for instance, and zinc and, you know, supplementally quercetin. What do you think of all of that?
Unproven yet. I wouldn't say no. I don't think there's harm to those. I don't think there's harm. But, you know, not proven in a rigorous trial yet, where I would feel comfortable as a physician saying you should be on this. If somebody makes a personal decision that they want to be on vitamin D and zinc and a multivitamin, I would applaud that just as a general health measure. I don't think it certainly won't hurt your ability to fight the virus. I don't know. I don't think we have strong evidence to say that it's absolutely going to help. There's no way it can hurt. And so having a healthy vitamin D, taking a multivitamin, taking a zinc, taking a vitamin C, you know, making sure you get adequate vitamin C. I think those are all good steps to take. I can't go as far to say that's going to help you 100%.
Okay. Now, in chapter 9 of your book, you talk about exposures unnecessary. Time does not heal all wounds. What is that about?
So that's a good question. And, you know, I believe you're referencing the environment, you know, and that was a chapter about the work environment. And so there's things in the environment that we know, things like asbestos, you know, things like dust exposure, big dust exposures like at 9/11, that you know, we know can be very harmful to the lungs. And these are sort of usually one or two time, or if somebody's at work and they inhale this, you know, over an occupational history time, you know, a 20-year time, those can be extremely dangerous to the lungs. And often these effects can come up, you know, 40 or 50 years later. So I think that's sort of where the title came from. So let's take a Merlin Olsen, for example. You know, he worked in some industries as a teenager, paint industries and some building industries. And then 50 years later, he comes down with a cancer that was very clearly related to that exposure as a teenager. So some of these things that we inhale, we don't always know. We don't always appreciate that they're toxic. And then they can come down the line, often decades later, quite scarily, and cause problems. So the lungs are very strange. There's a tremendous amount we don't know about them. You know, how could an exposure 40 years ago cause a cancer now? You know, it just doesn't make sense. There's so much about the world and about the atmosphere and the lungs that we can't explain. You know, there's tons of mysteries out there that we haven't solved, and that's certainly one of them. Why does damage from 40 years ago come back and manifest as a cancer today? And people at 9/11 are struggling with this now. You know, the first wave after 9/11 was cough, it was reflux disease. And then a few years later, those people exposed, they got asthma or they got some inflammatory lung conditions. And now, you know, almost 20 years out is when we're seeing these cancers, for whatever reason, you know, they take sort of decades to develop and or occur. So there's things out there that we don't totally understand. And I think it just speaks to the fact that, you know, we need to investigate what's in our atmosphere and that interaction between our lungs and our atmosphere. We don't totally understand everything about yet.
Okay, so one of the members of my team was really pushed me to ask you this question because it sort of goes hand in hand here. So she is about 50, but years ago, she did a little bit of smoking. Okay, so it was when she was in her late teens, you know, like early 20s. And then, you know, that was the end of that. And it was over the course of probably several years. And she's wondering, you know, she's a very healthy person, takes extremely good care of herself, eats well, you know, exercises, good healthy lungs from what we can see. All right, so you know, you've read, there's so much literature out there, statistics saying that if you did that, then now your chances of picking something up are like so much less because we followed this over time. Is that really true? Is she able to sleep at nighttime knowing that, you know, she's still okay, maybe forgiven for her sins?
I would say absolutely yes. You know, we see a lot of lung cancer patients. I have, you know, just speaking from personal experience, and then I'll talk about the data a little bit, is that I've never seen a lung cancer, you know, present from a couple years of smoking in your teens and early 20s, because there are many people out there who have done that, and I haven't seen a single case of lung cancer that has presented with a history like that. The basic teaching, you know, in pulmonary medicine is that, you know, you have smoked for a while, say you have smoked for a period of time, that then puts you at increased risk for lung cancer and for COPD. That risk declines for every year after you have been removed from that insult. And the basic teaching is if you have reached, you know, 20 years after that insult, or, you know, certainly 30 years, that you are then just at average risk for lung cancer for the general population, that exposure has then been, you know, pretty much nullified. So if you're 20, 30 years out from a short exposure and nothing has happened, then I would put you at, you know, whatever risk it is for the general population for lung cancer and not at an elevated risk. So I think whoever asks, they should feel rest assured. But certainly, you know, we should all be on edge because there's, you know, big issues with our environment in general. But for that particular instance, I would say he or she is back to whatever the average risk is.
Fantastic. And I know that applies to a lot of my listeners out there on the Herb podcast, you know, especially if you're of a certain age and, you know, you picked up that cigarette, you know, 30, 40 or more years ago. And there you have it. You know, you've mentioned this thing about the environment as we kind of wind this up here. I want to read something in your afterword in the book, which I just, you know, it just hits home again with a more broad, expansive glimpse at what we really need to do when it comes to lung health. You say, nonetheless, the threats to our breath are not taken seriously enough in many instances, and crises remain commonplace. From the devastating recent fires in California, the Amazon rainforest, and Australia to vaping-related diseases that have killed dozens to the emergence of strange infections such as COVID-19. Only when we begin to understand all the many elements of the breath and how they influence our well-being can we address new crises in an effective fashion. The atmosphere of the earth is perfectly fitted in its ability to sustain life, and vigilance to all aspects of our lung health is needed to ensure our future here on this planet, let alone on any others. Wow. Okay, I applaud you on that one. I mean, you absolutely nailed it. And I want to thank you for, you know, bringing this up as a global issue. Something that all of us, have to take much more seriously. I think when, you know, COVID first hit and China shut down its factories and all the rest of it, and they went into a lockdown and this and that, I will never forget, as long as I live, and I'm sure you saw them too, the satellite pictures from above China, where they compared the satellite pictures when the factories were going and there was just a ridiculous amount of smog and pollution. And then the satellite pictures when they shut everything down and you literally saw China. You couldn't see it before. I mean, it blew me away. So I just want to thank you for bringing that up. I really do.
I appreciate that. And you're absolutely right. The Earth has tremendous ability to heal. We can heal our atmosphere. We saw these dolphins splashing around in the Venice canals in joyous rapture. You know, the Earth and the atmosphere can heal, and our lungs can heal. We can do this. There's no question about it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. And on that beautiful note, I just want to remind everyone that we're talking to Dr. Michael J. Stephen. He is the author of just a fabulous book, an eye-opener, an easy read, and something you really want to share with your family. It'll enlighten you. It's called Breathtaking, The Power, Fragility, and Future of Our Extraordinary Lungs. Michael, I want to thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Peak. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Now, everyone out there, run on over to iTunes, rate and review the show. I want to hear from you because I'm Dr. Pam Peak, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peak or Twitter at Pam Peak MD or Instagram at Pam Peak MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.